Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory celebrate the mythic impulses of ancient Greece and Rome, and they invite you to celebrate with them. Welcome to Voice of Olympus.
I am Hercules Invictus.
And Athena Victory.
And we'd like to welcome you to Voice of Olympus on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Tonight, we have a repeat guest, Mr. Nick Curto, an awesome individual who I have encountered many times as I wend my way through modern cosmic spirituality. And he's always in a place of authority, always in a place of knowledge, and always a gentleman. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Nick to the show. Welcome, Nick.
Well, with that introduction, I think I don't know how I'm going to follow that. Thank you so much, Hercules. Yes, I am.
Well, I mean every word of it. You are an awesome individual, and I really, really am glad that we now have an entire show to dedicate just to you and part of what you're doing, because you're doing so many different things.
Boy, that's the truth. Sometimes it's wondering what hat I'm going to wear in the next hour, and then I'm going to switch it because I'm a different project. There's some projects that I don't believe I've told you about that I'm very much in, and at some point I want to also talk about that a little bit, because
awesome.
I think you're going to be you'll be surprised and I think delighted at some of the routes I'm going. But I got to say, Hercules, too, that you certainly, and also Michael and Diane Duncan in Los Angeles, California, and so many amazing people have come into my path. And I just think I'm one of the most fortunate people in the entire world to know you and the others. You've certainly given me so much a richness of knowledge and friendship, and I just want to acknowledge that.
Well, thank you. I'm greatly honored, and we feel the same about you, Nick. You're an awesome, awesome, awesome person. And I want to start today's show off with your sharing a little bit of your journey. How did you get involved in all of these wonderful things, the Disclosure Network New York, the Urantia book, all sorts of things that you're involved in? How did this quest begin?
Okay, well, I think very quickly, I was born in Springfield, Massachusetts. My dad was the president of the Springfield Armory Union there for over 25 years. I used to get the phone call when I was a little kid, and they'd say, "I'd like to speak to the president, please." And I knew it was my dad. So that was always a wild thing to happen. And so he was always an organizer. He always fought for the rights of the workers who were promised things that they were rightfully should have. And he was wonderful in fighting for that to happen. And he also had a sister who was a nun. She actually ran away from home to join the nunnery, and she became the most wonderful nun you could imagine. What a great sense of humor. I always remember laughing so much with her. She was incredibly spiritual. She was probably about 4 feet 10 inches. She was a little thing, wearing the black robes and the white collar and the beads. And she actually and she was so spiritual. She'd come in and we just felt lifted. And I think that a little bit of her rubbed off on me too. I also have a very big interest, as you know, in art and design and writing.
Yes.
So when it came time to go to a college, the only one I really wanted to go that I had my heart set on was the Massachusetts College of Art. And it was the only one I applied to. The letter came, and here we go, because this was going to decide my future. 2,000 people applied, and 200 get in every year. And
wow.
I read it, said a prayer. I did say a prayer. And it said, you have been accepted starting in September at the Massachusetts College of Art. And that really changed my life. I went to Boston, studied for 4 years, was incredibly inspired by the amazing teachers they have in that school and still do. Oh, my goodness. And then I came right to New York City. And I got to say, Hercules, and here it is. One of the main reasons I came here also, besides trying to start a career in art and design and writing, was that I really wanted to open myself up to new spiritual callings, to find out more about different religions, and ethnic groups. I wanted to seek that. That was on my list of things I really wanted to get involved with. And lucky me, I did. And I, again, meeting the most incredible people from various walks of life with different spiritual backgrounds. It was a unique and enriching experience. And when I was doing that, that's when I started going to the Unitarian Church, which is right near me on Lexington Avenue and 79th Street, because they read from every conceivable spiritual and religious book, because it's kind of like a smorgasbord of all the great world religions and spiritual callings. So for 2 years, every Sunday morning, I would go there, and it was always an enriching experience. And
that's
when I was going there, I'm sorry.
That's a really great place to meet people who are on a spiritual path and who are open to many different possibilities rather than being locked into one particular way of viewing and interacting with the divine.
Oh, boy, is that the truth. You hit it right on, Danielle, right on the head. And I think if we had more people doing that, they would understand people much more. There would be a calmness and a joy with the diversity that's so rich, that's part of all of our cultures. We should be celebrating that, not in any way fighting amongst ourselves. That's the last thing we should be doing. But anyhow, so when I was going there for 2 years, every Sunday morning, you know, bright and early, and after 2 years, he read the last thing the minister read that morning. He said, for the last reading, we're going to read from the Urantia book. And I thought, maybe that's an Eastern Indian type of a book, or I didn't know what it was. The word Urantia, U-R-A-N-T-I-A, it seemed like something very foreign to me. So, all right, so I started listening. Well, he read about two paragraphs, and I literally could not catch my breath. This was the most amazing literature, the most beautiful, the most loving, the most cutting edge. I was so impressed that it put me in a very different place. And when it finished and he said, go now in peace, and everyone filed out of this beautiful church, I literally had to spend 20 minutes because I literally needed that time to relax and try to remember U-R-A-N-T-I-A, Urantia, so that I would remember and try to find out what in the world was he reading. So that's how I found the book. The other part of that, your answer to the question, is that I've always been a spiritual person. I always looked at the stars and thought, we certainly are not alone. Certainly not. And that became more evident than ever as time went on. I was in New York City.
With me, the aha place has always been theosophy.
Yeah, okay.
I've explored many of its modern permutations. A lot of the cosmic philosophies, religions, and spiritualities of today are branches of the theosophical tree. And the theosophical roots go way back into the dim mists of antiquity, back at least until the time of the Phoenicians, and I'm sure much older. So you have this corpus of knowledge, which some people call hermetic, I like theosophy because it means divine wisdom. And a lifetime is not enough to even begin to scratch the surface of this information. And the amazing thing is that when people go within, they'll encounter this information within. And that's how all these different branches came to be. And a lot of the information is labeled channeled because it comes from a deeper place inside ourselves. But it speaks to our souls very powerfully. So just like your aha, I'm home came with the Urantia book, with me it's always been the ancient and the modern versions of theosophy. That's where my soul feels at home.
And isn't that the incredible life experience when you can have that aha moment and feel as though something has changed for the better, something wonderful has just happened to me. Boy, that's I wish that for everyone.
Me too. Now, how from the Urantia book that presents the world in one way, the universe in one way, and you're also leading the Disclosure Network in New York. That looks
right.
at the world in a totally different way, and I really admire how you balance these two world views. Without compromising either of them. And that's quite a feat, my friend. You know. But can you tell us a little bit about the DNNY?
Oh, I'd be delighted. I am so proud of that organization and every single person in it. About a little over maybe 16 years ago, we had a volunteer group here in New York because Dr. Steve Greer was going to come to New York and speak. It was the first time he ever did that, and I was aware of him. He is an amazing man who really is seeking major disclosure of UFOs, of ETs, of what the governments of the world know and have done and do. He thinks it's time. He thinks it's way past time for that, and I was aware of what he was saying and doing. So when I found out he was coming to New York, I got a hold of the office and I said, I would like to help because I want to fill that room. Well, it turned out to be a huge auditorium, and I was one of about six people who was a volunteer person who wrote copy, PR, did all of that. And we literally packed a large auditorium on Fifth Avenue. He was brilliant. He's a brilliant speaker. Have you ever heard of him or seen him speak?
Yes, I have. A friend of mine is very much into the Disclosure Network, and I've watched with him countless YouTube clips and a couple of DVDs, so I'm familiar with him.
Oh, I'm glad you did. Everyone should look him up, Stephen Greer. He's an amazing, amazing man, and he's still very much out there and advocating for full disclosure. Well, anyhow, after it was over, the volunteers were all saying goodbye. And then me and one of the other members of the volunteer committee, Mary Jo, we were talking. We said, you know, why are we all saying goodbye? What we should be saying is, what's next? What should we be doing in New York? This is a topic that needs an awful lot of public awareness. So we had a private coffee shop meetings, and said, why don't we start an organization? And what we'll do is we'll talk about disclosure. We'll get people who've written books about it. We'll have roundtable discussions. We'll do all of that. And so we decided to start something called Disclosure Network New York, DNNY. The website, by the way, is dnny.info, I-N-F-O, dnny.info. And so it's going on. It's right now. It's on the web right now. Mary Jo has been amazing, along with another member, Jim, putting the website together and updating it. We do two meetings every month throughout the year. So this is a very ambitious group, and we have programmed amazing people to be on it. In fact, one of our meetings coming up is going to have the niece of Betty and Barney Hill.
Wow.
She works for MUFON, and she is an amazingly talented, very, very informed woman. And she's going to, since she's way, way upstate, we've decided that the way to do that meeting for her would be to do it on Skype. We have a a video projector that can project a 7-foot image. She can see us, we can see her. Her name is Kathleen Marden, M-A-R-D-E-N. And Kathleen, her subject is going to be titled Possible Abductions. And she's investigating this case. She's been doing this for about, I believe, 3 years. She's the MUFON Director of Experiencer Research. And she's going to present a highly perplexing case of possible ongoing alien abductions. And she has been investigating that for more than 3 years. Physical evidence points to the abduction, yet she says that the case often is fascinating with photographic evidence and paranormal activity and medical evidence of a large tumor that was suddenly healed after a light orb entered the experiencer's body. Oh my goodness, this is going to be quite something. She's scheduled, by the way, just in case you or any of your listeners would like to come, on Sunday, July 10th.
Wow, awesome. We're moving in that direction here, too. We're going to have Nick Redfern on and Janet Sitchin over the next few weeks.
Ah, wow. That's outrageous. That's outrageous.
And, of course, that'll spin off to Pride of Olympus, our next first spin-off e-radio show. A lot of my attention is in that area, as you well know. That's how we met, and those were some of the first conversations that you and I had. Now, what's the relation of DNNY to the Disclosure Network of Stephen Greer? Is there a formal relation, an informal relationship?
No. We've certainly talked to Stephen. In fact, I wrote him and said that we are ready if he wants to come back to New York City, and I really hope he's going to consider that. Our organization, oh boy, wouldn't it? And our organization would be more than happy to help set that all up and help him to that. So I talked to his wife recently. He was out of town at the time, but I'm hoping to hear back, and we would love it if he would consider doing that, because it's been too long now, and he's got a lot more to talk about.
Yeah, some of his stuff is amazing.
Yeah, it's not a formal thing, but he knows of us. We put on our bulletins. We have news bulletins. We send out a few every single day, and every time that he's going to announce something, we always put that on for our members so they know what's going on with him, what he's up to. That's ongoing, and that has been ongoing for 15 years.
I love those messages, by the way. Unfortunately, I can't read all of them, but there's enough of a variety where every day at least a couple of them catch my attention and I pursue them, and it leads me to an article or to a video, and it's really expanded my understanding of very many things. So I thank you for that.
Well, you're more than welcome. It's if anybody is interested in UFOs, Disclosure Network, how things are being done by the media or not, chemtrails, what's going on in politics, what's going on in the scientific community. And, you know, everything is related. That's the thing that's interesting. Everything, that's what I've learned also over the years, that one thing leads to the next. And the more you know about different areas, it all starts connecting. And our model is connecting the dots to seek truth. That is really absolutely what we do. We connect the dots on a lot of levels, and boy, some of the connections are incredible. One major one, if I may mention one particular person that's a standout, is Rebecca Roth, R-O-T-H. She's on YouTube, and you can hear some of her lectures. And Rebecca was a flight attendant for 30 years. She really knows her stuff, and a purser. And when 9/11 happened, you know, she could have been on those planes. And it really connected with her and her profession and her love of other people in the profession. When that happened, that hit her, as all of us, really hard. And after months, she said, you know, I've got to investigate this more. There's some things I don't understand. The bottom line is she has been amazing at coming up with new facts. Facts of what happened on 9/11. She's coming out with a new book next month, and there's going to be more of her research in that book. She does the books as novels, but all the facts are facts in the books. That's the way that she gets those facts out, through her stories.
Or fiction,
she's also
yes.
a very good writer. Through fiction. But it's the fictional people in the novel, but everything that they're discovering is real. And I'm telling you, what a read. Oh, my, I couldn't put it down. I honestly could not put that book down. And she's done two books already, and the third book is coming out, I think, in about a month and a half.
Send me an email or a link, and I'll gladly share it.
Right. And at some point, yeah, I just think that for what she's got there, I mean, it's not directly related to your particular network, but in a way, what she's doing here, and she said she's doing it for the thousands of people who lost their lives and for their families and friends who deserve to know the truth of 9/11. And she maintains, and I do agree with her, we don't know anywhere near what really happened. And it makes a big difference. We need to know that to go on. So she's a hero. And for a lot of people at Disclosure Network, Rebecca Roth is a true American for doing that kind of research and coming up with amazing facts. Believe me, it's so much that you need a while to get your brain around what she's investigating and finding. But it's thrilling that she's doing this research.
I have to check it out.
Yeah, she's already done one program, and she's going to do another, I think, in the early fall through Skype. Again, a Skype presentation. So she'll do about 45 minutes an hour, and then we'll be able to do a Q&A with questions and answers directly to Rebecca. And she's a live wire and a wonderfully fun and knowledgeable person. And it was one of our best meetings, and I'm so looking forward to another meeting with her. I don't know if I told you this, Hercules, but there's something else in this mix that I think you'd find interesting.
Okay.
A friend of mine who's on the 9/11 Truth Movement, again, he's lectured at the Disclosure Network, and 9/11 Truth Movement, again, is for to find out what is really going on with on 9/11, who did what to whom. And there's a lot of new information out there that needs to be put out to the public. Anyhow, he called me up about a month and a half ago and said there was a speaker coming to New York with some information that everyone should know. And he said, Nick, I think that you and your group would be very interested in going. So I asked him to send me the email, and I put it out to the group, and some of them came. But here's the deal. I didn't know the speaker. I didn't know about him. But he gave me his name. So I went to the computer, and I looked him up on YouTube, and sure enough, there was some interviews with him. Well, I chose one and was listening to it, and this guy was dynamite, an amazingly good speaker, had his facts, really a thrilling speaker. But here's the thing that's surprising. It was the interviewer that I kept going back to, because the interviewer was incredible. He wasn't working with a lot of notes. He was actually listening to who he was interviewing, as you do, which is a sign of a good interviewer. And he was so in the minute. He was asking incredible questions, and he was so delightful. And I just thought, who is this guy? And I thought, since he has a lot of programs on the network, the net, he has his own TV program, so you can see him as well as hear him and all that. And so I said, wouldn't it be fun if I interviewed him? Because he does have information
awesome.
About UFOs and everything else. So I got his name, and I got a hold of him. And here's the thing you're going to find amazing, is that I just said, his name is Sean, and I said, Sean, I just want to tell you how much I enjoyed you and your style of interviewing. It's thrilling. And I was wondering if you would consent if I could interview you either on Skype or in person for one of my Disclosure Network New York programs here in New York City. And he said, I'm in Europe right now, but I'll be back in New York in a week on my way to California. Why don't I call you when I get there? I said, all right. Sure enough, the phone rings a week later, and he said, Nick, I'm in town. Are you free for lunch on Monday? And I said, well, yes, I am. Of course I am. But I thought, what a nice guy to offer that right off the bat. So I met him. And here's the thing that's interesting. His last name is Stone, Sean Stone. He's the son of Oliver Stone, the famous director.
Wow.
And I didn't know that. I just knew that this was one dynamite, very, very amazing guy. So here I am talking to Sean Stone, Oliver Stone's son. He couldn't have been more delightful, informed. I had such a good time. And I asked him at the end of the luncheon, we had an amazing meeting. And I said, would you ever consider me interviewing you in the near future? He said, Nick, yes, send me dates. You got me.
That is so great. And I'm glad that you got him. And I want to see that interview or listen to it. Is it archived online?
No, we haven't done it yet. It's going to be in either late summer or early fall. And I will keep you abreast of that. But I am so thrilled that he's going to do that. And but trust me on this one. This guy is one of the best interviewers and one of the most exciting personalities I've seen anywhere in a long, long time. He has his own show. It's called his show on the internet is called Buzzsaw with Sean
Stone. I've seen a few Buzzsaw episodes, so I know you're talking about it. Okay, great.
I just wanted to give that a plug.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was a good show, and I'm sure he appreciates it as well. Before we go to the mid-show break, I want to ease into Atlantis a little bit. Now, you've sent a few Atlantean disclosure emails, and I greatly appreciated them, and they were very interesting about how the Atlantean civilization still exists, and they tied it into the vast mythology of underground races and civilizations that control the surface. So would you care to share a little bit about this, and we'll get to it more after the break?
Oh, boy, yes, I would. That's going to be so I got some interesting news for you on that, too.
Awesome.
If you want to wait till the break, we'll do it after the break, okay?
Okay, but we have a couple of minutes, so you can lead into it.
Oh, we do.
Tease us with it.
Okay, all right. Well, let me see. As is on so many numerous occasions, current scientific discovery confirms the dates, places, and events originally disclosed for the Urantia. It was called the Urantia Papers. It's now the Urantia Book. That's been going for more than 70 years. But one of those recent discoveries shows a connection between the legend of the lost continent of Atlantis and the first Garden of Eden, as told from the Urantia Book. In other words, this is amazing news. A Urantia Book reader by the name of Robert Sarmast, S-A-R-M-A-S-T, he did a book called Discovery of Atlantis, and it's an incredible book. And he said, I believe that what the Urantia Book is describing as the Garden of Eden could very well be the same exact site, the same location as Atlantis. It might have a different name, but that's the city. So this is amazing. He got a multi-million dollar grant from a number of people to go there and actually explore the region scientifically. And that's what I wanted
to
talk about. Isn't it?
Michael
Duncan
spoke about that a little bit too.
Oh, great. Okay. I mean, that is incredible, you know. And when you see the map of Gibraltar and the Mediterranean Sea and then see Cyprus, you kind of get it. Like, okay, there is a connection. And he gets very into it scientifically and comes up with some amazing facts.
It's the Mediterranean location for Atlantis. It was Santorini for a very long time. Or Thales, as it was called in antiquity, but now Cyprus has been emerging as the new possible location for Atlantis, and there's increasingly more evidence at this point, I think, for Cyprus than for Santorini.
Robert traveled to Cyprus and spent a year there preparing for his expedition with the right boats, the right scientific equipment, and in November of 2004, he set sail to go into that area, very specific area, where he thought that may very well, underneath the water and underneath all the sand and rock, might be where the ancient city was.
Awesome.
Can you imagine being on that boat and the excitement of okay, guys, here we are. Lower the equipment in the water so that we can get some sonar readings of what's underneath the water. Can you imagine being on that boat?
We have to get him on the show too, just to get his firsthand experiences, because that is phenomenally exciting. And we'll continue it after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Athena. Athena, what are we listening to?
Well, for our midpoint musical interlude, we have Castalia Alexandrian with Silver Wheel.
Silver Wheel.
International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more, all available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio, so go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
And we're back. I am Hercules Invictus.
And I'm Athena Victory.
And this is the Voice of Olympus. And today's guest is Nick Curto from the Disclosure Network of New York and many other places. And today's topic is Atlantis Yet Lives. Welcome back, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Before the break, we started talking about Atlantis, and you shared how there were Urantia Book papers that spoke of Atlantis being the Garden of Eden, or being equivalent to the Garden of Eden, and how a Urantia Book member was going to Cyprus to do some underwater explorations that might locate Atlantis and solve that riddle once and for all. Now,
you're right.
Go ahead.
Just to know, and I'm sure you are a student of Greek history, that Plato got a lot of this information from the Egyptians. This goes back many, many, many years. And the names have been changed. Some of the information has been lost through the centuries. Although I have to say that the Egyptians were very good about recording things. Thank goodness they were. But of course, when things are then translated and rewritten, things get changed, including a lot of the names. So Atlantis may not be the original name at all. That's up for grabs right now. That's what Plato named it. Now, a lot of people think that Atlantis must be in the Atlantic Ocean because of the similarity in name, but a great many of the researchers think that that is certainly not true at all. That it's not anywhere in the Atlantic Ocean, and that it's really in the very close to Greece, only further over near Syria. So that's just a point. Again, things can get lost and differently interpreted, and that is major. But here's the deal: the Urantia Book goes into incredible detail about the Garden of Eden. Incredible detail. You would be blown away with the descriptions and all the various aspects as time went on. It was the enlightened civilization. It was cutting edge. It was the center of culture, of art. It was scientific. It was all of those things that we associate with what we know as Atlantis. So Robert Sarmost, I hope I'm his name again, S-A-R-M-A-S-T, did this expedition. He's done it twice now, which is incredible that he did this because it took an awful lot to go there with the scientific equipment and the right professionals to go with the equipment and take a look at that region. And what he found is what the Urantia book is saying, the Garden of Eden, where it was to relationship to the sea, the mountains, the vast plain, where the hill is, all of that. There's about 50 items that totally line up with the descriptions of Atlantis. So once that was realized, it was, okay, guys, we got to do this. We've got to check this out. So he got millions of dollars because that's what it took to go there. And they had a really hard time at first getting the equipment to work. Some of the cables got knotted up. And anyhow, it was a real challenge, but they managed to do it. And some of the structure, like this long, I guess it would be a wall, a big wall, perfectly straight. They located that. Now, this is under a huge amount of water and sand and rock, and that showed up on the scan, and it was showing up exactly where they thought it should show up. So that is just one little piece of the puzzle that just check out.
I'm looking forward to exploring that aspect a little bit more. I have somewhere a book on the Cyprus and Atlantis, but I haven't had a chance to read it yet. And it might very well be from the gentleman that you're speaking of. So I will look for that, and I will put that higher on my priority list of things to read, which I think I have a stack of things to read. But what you're saying sounds very interesting. Now, aliens are also associated with Atlantis, too. And the Disclosure Network, I know, has a lot to say about aliens. So which alien races are visiting the Earth now, and which of those do you think were visiting the Garden of Eden or Atlantis in antiquity?
Okay, I can answer part of that question. I don't want to answer it if I'm not sure about certain things, but let me give you the four main types.
That okay.
People have told me in very detailed recollections of who they have met on various levels, and some of it was quite extraordinary. I'm going to lead off with the Nordics. I'm getting feedback. I don't know if you're hearing that. The Nordics
are a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't know where that's coming from, but anyhow, the Nordics are tall, blonde, very good shape, very physically beautiful people. They're a high spirituality, and they're very enlightened. I think if I had my choice, that would be one of the first groups that I would want to meet on a personal level is the Nordics. The women are also
associated with the planet Venus and the Pleiades most often, the Nordic aliens.
Yes. And the women also are like that also. They're very beautiful. They're blonde, tall. Very spiritual, enlightened, and there's many people who have described contact with these kinds of people. I talked to a person who had amazing contact with that group over a number of years, as a matter of fact, and his name is Charlie Hall. He's given some lectures. Anyhow, he's an amazing guy. Now, another group would be the hybrids, and those are grays. With human characteristics. In other words, they have together mated with women of this planet. And that's, in a way, very a sad story because these women are not consensual here, but they are taken and they have produced hybrid children. There's many stories about that in all South America, Brazil especially, but other places in the world. Now we have the grays. The grays are about 4.5 feet tall. They have very, very large heads, and they have very large dark eyes, very deep, deep black, shiny eyes, huge. They don't have a nose. They don't have any hair on their heads. They have very thin necks and very thin, small bodies, gray color bodies, and they have four fingers. I believe I've had
Roswell aliens, right?
Yes, that's one place, but that's certainly not the only place at all. They are they have been used in our culture in sci-fi movies a lot, but these are real. These are real beings. Another group is the reptilians. They scare the dickens out of me in a way because they're 7 to 9 feet tall. They have green, scaly skin, like a reptilian. They have three long fingers and a thumb with a nodule on the end of the thumb, and they have holes for ears. Large lizard-like eyes, muscular legs, and muscular arms. Now, another group of beings that, and I know a couple of people who've had experiences with these, and they would be they look like praying mantises. Literally.
Yes,
you've seen a praying mantis before, only these are very, very tall, taller than human beings, thin green bodies, large eyes, and they look like a 6-foot praying mantis standing there. And,
wow.
I've talked to people who've had encounters with these beings, both good and bad. So, I mean, they can't all be making this up. Some of the stories are very similar. They're told with great sincerity, and these people are only recalling to tell other people what they have encountered. So those are some of the main, not by far all of them, because there's literally at least thousands of different beings in all the galaxies, but these are four that are showing up on this planet. Not limited to these four, but certainly they are here, and people have had experiences.
Look, I've heard of those, and sometimes they're kind of lumped together. Like sometimes the grays are thought to be a type of reptilian, or to be a type of insectoid. Different people have interpreted the aliens that you spoke of and their place in the spectrum of alien beings. And one of the things I've always found fascinating is finding their equivalents in ancient myths.
Okay, yes, because
that
certainly
these beings
it's not
have
limited.
Been with us for a very long time.
Yeah, it's certainly not limited to our planet in this time at all. This goes way, way back. The American Indians have amazing stories of encounters. People in Europe from the many, many hundreds of years have written about the lights in the sky, the vehicles that they've seen when flight was 200 years away by our Earth standards. And they've seen lights and machines flying overhead in India, different places in Europe. I'm getting a lot of feedback. Hercules, are you hearing this?
No, now I don't hear. Before I heard some feedback, now I'm not hearing any feedback.
Okay. But, I mean, this is just – it's not in just one or two little incidents. These are thousands now, thousands of incidents where people are experiencing, seeing, and also encountering these amazing, amazing experiences with beings from other places. And do I personally think that exists? Yes, of course I do. And I had one experience, my own self, when I was a young – probably around 10 or 12 years old. That it's vague. It's a long time ago, but I do remember it, and I can't explain it. I cannot rationally explain what I saw. So, and this was a being. This was not someone from this planet. So, I've had out of body experiences too, where I literally was up on the ceiling, looking down at myself and my entire apartment, as if it was as real as could be. If it was just a split second, but I was out of my body. So I know that can happen because it's happened to me.
Would you care to share your alien experience from when you were 11?
Well, how much time do we have, Hercules? A few minutes?
We have 10 minutes, and we have to do some wrap-up and get contact info, but if you could fit it in there, I'd love to hear it.
Okay. I'll try to do it as quickly as I can. I'm from Springfield, Massachusetts.
Leave it for the next show. What would you prefer?
I'll do it now. I can do it now. There's other stories I can do later. So, when I was a kid, we would take what we call the Sunday morning ride. And that was my mother and father in the front seat and my sister Peggy and me in the back seat. And since we lived in New England, in Massachusetts, you know, we could do a Sunday drive and go to other states because it's fairly close. So we would do that as a family outing almost every Sunday. And this was a typical Sunday in the summer. It was sunny. We were in the car, probably on a two-lane road. I'm not sure where in Massachusetts or perhaps one of the other states we were, but it was a lot of trees in the forest, and there wasn't a lot of traffic at all, very little. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting there in the back seat with my sister and my mother and father in the front seat, and all of a sudden, as they say, something happened. And what happened was a wave of high energy swept through the car. I'm talking, it would be like a billion watts of electric energy going from the front of the car to the back of the car, and it hit me and everybody in the car like a wall of energy. This is out of the clear blue sky. I remember that it felt like the little tiny pins were in every portion of my body. My eyes, my face, my body was pins, little needles, and it hurt a lot. And I remember thinking, what in the, and then boom, another wave of energy hit us. And I blacked out. The next thing I remember is that it was dark. Now, this was the afternoon when it happened. It was sunny. It was dark, so I missed some time. And I didn't see my parents or my sister, but I was sitting, I think, on our car, on the hood of the car, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't move my body at all, and I was about 4 inches from the face of an alien with the big black eyes, looked like black pools of liquid glass. And I was looking right at these eyes, and I was just in wonder and fear. And the next thing I remember, it was dark. My father was driving maybe 20, 30 miles an hour on this little tiny road, and nobody was talking for the whole trip back home.
Wow.
Nobody would say a word. And that's not like our family. I mean, we are always talking. Look over there. You know, did you do your homework? You know, a thousand things. And we weren't talking, nor were we talking when we got home. It was so freaky, but I was so stunned with this, and obviously they were too. And the thing was, it went out of my mind until maybe 15 years ago, which is a long time from that, when all of a sudden it flooded back. It was almost like a hypnotic suggestion that had somehow ended. And this, all of what I'm telling you and a little bit more, flooded back to me. And I was stunned, and I thought, why didn't I remember that earlier? Why didn't I do that? And I kept it to myself because, you know, I just didn't know how to even place it, what to do. Eventually, I told this to the Disclosure Network people because we do share our personal stories, if we have them, so the other people can understand also what we've been through. But this was a very traumatic experience, and it was a hurtful experience. It was against my will. It physically hurt my body. And I'll never forget it.
Well, I'm honored that you shared it here. And I would like to, we're going to have to wrap up the show on this point, but I'd like to start off the next time we have you on with aliens and according to our modern understanding, what are they doing here and who are they? And according to our most ancient understandings, what are they doing here and who are they? And I'd love to have you back on to talk about that. And
I would certainly love that too. That's an incredible subject. It's a multifaceted subject and fascinating. So that would be amazing.
So what is next for Nick Curto?
Well, one of the things I'm doing right now, which I don't think I've told you about, but As a Urantia book reader, and I've been reading for 25 years, and it really has changed my life for the better in many countless ways. But I had maybe 15 years ago a recurring dream. And the recurring dream was I was dreaming of white domes, big structures, domes, white domes, not like Buckminster Fuller, full of those triangles that they connect together with glass. These were solid white domes, and the dream wouldn't go away. So I decided that I think I know what they're for. I'm being downloaded. I'm being told something. So what I did, well, I thought, you know what? I'm going to go with this feeling. I'm going to do something about this. So I did some research on these white domes. If we're running out of time, I can finish the story next time. Do we have any more time?
We really don't, but I want to hear it next time, though, and I'll have you on soon. The first
okay.
Available show is yours.
Okay, you got a deal.
And if people want to get in contact with you or with the Disclosure Network New York or with the Urantia Study Group of New York, how would they do so?
Okay, that's easy. I'm going to give you my personal email address, and anyone sincerely interested in any of this are more than welcome to contact me. My email address is NICKNYNY, the figure one, at gmail.com. That's all one word, NICKNYNY1 at gmail.com. If they want to get to the Disclosure Network, and we've got this coming Sunday, we have a wonderful panel discussion about personal UFO experiences. That's going to be this Sunday, and all that information is on our website. And that website, it's easy, it's dnny.info, dnny.info, which means Disclosure Network New York.
And how about for the Urantia book?
It would be urantiabook.org. Urantiabook is one word, .org. That will get you into the main level of the Urantia book, and they can get me through there.
Nick, thank you once again. Always a pleasure to be speaking with you, and I look forward to speaking with you again very soon.
Hercules, you and your beautiful wife rock, and thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you. Talk to you soon, Nick.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Okay. Tonight, there are no CERN updates that we can share, but we have a lot going on. First, Ishtar Fest, which is next Saturday, June 18th. It will be from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and I will be hosting a ceremony with my lovely wife, Athena, and with Terry Power from CERN. It was originally Men's Mysteries, but we've made it open to everybody because everybody goes through death and rebirth many times in their life. So it's open to everybody. It'll be called the Apotheosis of Hercules, and it'll be mostly the legends of Hercules, but it's applicable to everyone and anyone. Then we have the Center for the Study of Living Myth, the In-Between Realms, Thursday, June 23rd, 2016. And on June 30th, at the Amber Dragon, the Seven Heavens, that'll be an 8-month-long monthly journey. And the first one we're doing is the Sun.
Okay. And for more information on Hercules and Athena, visit our website at www.herculesinvictus.net. For contact and community, visit us on Facebook at Hercules Invictus, Mythic Atlantis, or the Voice of Olympus. Hercules and Athena are also available for Olympian workshops, mythic activities, as well as epic special events and appearances.
And thank you for all that. And it's true, we do all those things. Next show, we're going to have Gene Landrum, hero of the information age and founder of Chuck E. Cheese. He's going to be discussing Myth and Majesty, one of his books on human potential and excellence. And again, I'd like to thank Nick Curto for being on the show, and I look forward to the next time he's on as well. Good night, fare thee well, and joyous journeys for me.
And good night to everyone from Athena.
Thanks for
for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.